Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Robot Industry Podcast. I'm Jim Barretta. I'm your host. I have an interesting podcast for you today. I was at a trade show, the Automate trade show in Chicago. I had the opportunity to interview Jean-Pierre Haffout, he is the CEO of MER. I also have a regional sales rep, Kevin March, who I've known for a long time and have been trying to get on the podcast as well. So I thought I'd combine the two. So you get the CEO view. You also get an area sales reps view on what's happening with MER, what's happening with autonomous robots, and what some of the innovations are happening. Enjoy the podcast. And if you have any questions, please get a hold of me. You can find me, Jim Barretta, on LinkedIn. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Robot Industry Podcast. We're here at Automate 2024, and I happen to have a special guest for the show. This is JP Haffout, and he is president of MIR, or Mobile Industrial Robots, out of Denmark. JP, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jim. Happy to be here.
So, JP, what are you showing here? You're obviously showing your autonomous mobile robots, your AMRs. So what's in the booth?
Our deck loads, which everyone knows, but also a new product, which is the pallet jack. We call it the MIR AI-driven pallet jack. It's the MIR 1200, and that's the product that we're launching this year.
There is a lot of stuff going on in your booth. And tell me, what are some of the trends that you're seeing at MIR?
I see a lot of artificial intelligence. We are focused on that. We have this pallet jack that I was talking about that is AI-driven. It's basically discriminative AI. So it's using machine learning to recognize the load that it needs to carry. In this case, the first launch will be a pallet. The advantage, Jim, is that it can recognize the pose by seeing part of the pallet. If you move the pallet and it's in an unexpected location, it will adjust and still carry it. If the pallet is shrink-wrapped or even damaged, it will recognize this. And this is actually the leap in technology that we're bringing with AI.
And so tell us a little bit about that AI journey. Like, you just didn't start with AI. You've been talking with customers. You've been doing projects. How does that work?
I mean, there is a lot of competitors with a pallet jack in the market, and we wanted to come in with a big bang to bring a leap in technology. And we recognized that in warehouse application, in industry, when a pallet is not perfect, then problems occur and robots do not carry the pallets. So we wanted to take that leap, and we wanted to recognize these things and do better. So that's how it happened. And, you know, with the boom of AI and NVIDIA and so on, we said we need to get into that, you know, segment and do it better.
And that's very exciting. And when somebody's out there and listening to the audience and going, yeah, where do they get the data for their AI?
So it's machine learning using cameras. We have five cameras. Yes. That are dedicated for the pallet recognition. And we have the typical standard sensors, which are LIDARs, for safety and navigation. And the leap forward is that in the future, we will fuse this information, data. You asked me about data. And even use it for navigation. There are a lot of shop floors that, depending on what you're producing, they change their layout. And we don't want every time that a customer changes their layout that our robot has to be retrained. We want our robots to be smart and recognize that and navigate.
So tell me a little bit about the customer bullseye that is interested in AI, or are all of them interested in AI, or should they be?
They should be, because, you know, as automation is coming and as the missions will be more and more complex, our robots also need to be smarter. Mainly, MIR is, our top customers are in the automotive sector, but also the semiconductor and electronics. And now with this pallet jack, we will be able to enter strongly into the warehouse business. So we're covering everything, and we want to give new solutions that will make our customers' business better. And we recognize that we are in their revenue stream, so we have to improve. We cannot and we should not stop their production.
Absolutely. No, that's super, super interesting. And what trends are you seeing, too, with just your regular MiR robots?
I mean, there is a paradigm shift. So 4 or 5 years ago, everyone wanted to have the smartest deck load or AMR. And now it's more and more changing into, I would like to have a well-working fleet. And by fleet, I'm talking 50-plus robots. So this is where we are also launching a so-called new fleet software. It's called the MiR Fleet Enterprise that will allow us to scale up to fleets that are 100-plus robots, but also that is enterprise-ready with cybersecurity. This is, I think, the next leap.
And are you seeing, for the small, medium manufacturers out there, are you still seeing the guys coming in, I want 5 MiR robots?
Yeah, and it works very well for them. And then they get encouraged and they want 10. So we support them equally as the big customers, and their missions and traffic is different, but we share with them the knowledge. And one way of doing that is upgrading and using generative AI into MiR Insights. MiR Insights is a platform. It's like a data acquisition tool that we launched exactly a year ago at right. Automate. And now the next generation will be AI enhanced, generative AI, meaning you ask a question at deployment on how to do it better. And this would sieve into our database and find the right answer and the right advice to give you so that you deploy better, whether you buy 5 or 50.
So give me an example. I'm going to dig into this a little bit. What is an example that a customer might use in a generative AI situation to make his or her MiR robots work better?
I mean, a lot of customers come back to us with questions saying, at a certain intersection in my shop floor, the robots goes very slow. Why? Usually we take this question and we have an engineer answer it, but we want to at least have a first and second layer where our AI system would answer this question and give guidance. So why are the robots creating a traffic situation in here? And then just writing this like ChatGPT, getting suggestions and recognizing, even sharing the shop floor with our AI system, and our AI system would see past experiences and give advice right away to the customer.
So this is really cool and very exciting. But what do I need now if I'm the director of a warehouse operations? Do I need to have some specialized staff? Like, how do I gear up to have generative AI in my MiR robot?
I mean, it's as simple as using ChatGPT now, which our kids are using very easily. And that's how easy we want it to be for users. So it's going to be easy, Jim. And I believe that giving this service from genesis to operation of the robot, so over the life cycle, will help a lot. I mean, the big, let's say, challenge is always on deployment and the ease of deployment. And this will help a lot in designing the right fleet with the right number of robots, with the right interactions, and so on. And this could be done seamlessly with AI using MiR Insights.
And so if I'm listening out there and I'm a warehouse manager and I go, wow, this sounds kind of cool. How does this work? Like, I call you, I mean, go to your website?
It's part of our offering. So we have a service offer that, and part of this service package is also MiR Insights. Mm-hmm. And part of it is also application engineering and deployment. So some customers would just, pay for the service, but some customers where we have very intimate relations would ask and would pay for an in-house engineer to be there.
Right. And
these are for very big deployments and special cases, but we offer that too.
Sure. And then that would allow you to kind of do this whole ramp up
very seamlessly and effortlessly.
And it allows us also to learn for the next deployment. So having someone there is having eyes on the ground and learning how to do it better.
Right. And knowing if I need 20 robots or 25 robots, right? This is the other problem, right?
Yeah. And this ties into our experience, but we sit with the customer and we do an ROI calculation to prove to them that it makes sense. Yes. And we would be the first ones also to tell them, you know what, for this application, maybe our solutions are not the best. So we can also say no. We don't jump on every opportunity. We want to be successful in our deployments.
JP, we sometimes just make that big general leap on the ROI of using autonomous mobile robots. But what are some of the things that your customers are talking about? Are they talking about safety? Are they talking about ROI? What are they talking about?
They are talking about ROI. They are talking about TCO, total cost of what is
ownership.
They are especially happy with our safety capability. We are, I must tell you, I mean, the pallet jack will be ISO 3691-4 certified, which is the highest safety certification in this industry. And this is very important for them. If you noticed, our booth is the only booth having robots driving with people around. And this is how confident we are with our safety. And this is important.
What about the... you know, when you may be going into a union environment or an environment that doesn't have automation, I kind of call this the culture of automation. Is there any, is that planned in your deployments at all?
We are educating the workers, the unions, that this will create better jobs for people. People want to avoid the 3Ds, dull, dirty, and dangerous. And I've seen friction, not in this continent, but in another continent. But it's our role also to go there from the education level. We go to schools, we go to universities. We give them our robots to work with, and slowly they realize that this does not replace better jobs for them. It helps them. It's our robots are there to work with people. And to do the jobs, and I will steal this from my sister company, UR. You know, we want people to work with robots and not do robots' job. So that's what our companies are offering.
That's very exciting, and thank you. And did we forget anything in this short interview?
Yeah, maybe the only thing, you know, since this is the first time we have a common booth with my sister company, Universal Robots, and MIR, we are also showcasing the mobile cobot, which is the integration of the AMR, which is the deck load, with a cobot arm from UR. And this comes together, and it has many applications, especially in the semiconductor business and electronics. And there we take advantage of being part of the Teradyne group, who work with all electronics and semiconductor companies. And this mobile cobot, as we call it, is for machine tending. And which machines? The Teradyne machines. So it all, it's like, you know, closing the circle and having a perfect ecosystem for our products. So
there's a lot going on when you put a universal robot or cobot on top of a MIR. I guess it's a cobot too, right? Or do you call it an AMR?
We call it AMR, but it is a cobot at the end of the day because it works with people.
A lot of axis of motion going on there. Yeah. So if someone's listening to this, they want to check out MIR, what do you recommend they do?
They visit our website. They come to the fair and talk to us. Just come to us. We are at your service. So you can find us easily.
JP, thanks very much for joining me in this short interview. If someone wants to find out more information about MIR Robots, and that's spelled M-I-R, and it's short for Mobile Industrial Robots, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, they need to visit our website. The URL is mir-robots.com. And please ask us, and in the future also we will have an AI helper there to guide you and look at our application, look at the segments that we are serving. So everyone is welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Robot Industry Podcast. We're glad you're here and thank you for subscribing. My guest for this episode is Kevin March. Kevin started his career at a high-tech automation distributor back in 2011. After working his way through the organization from applications to sales, he got into the world of machine vision. Kevin spent 6 years introducing customers to machine vision, 3D, and deep learning systems across Ontario. Now Kevin is responsible for introducing MIR, or MIR, robots to the Canadian market. So this is kind of a fun recording for me because we started out going to do a podcast recording on industrial machine vision, and now we're back to autonomous mobile robots. Kevin, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me.
No, it's great that we're back on track. And I just wanted to ask, maybe you could tell our audience a little bit, who is MIR and who owns MIR?
Yeah, for sure. So MIR, M-I-R, is an acronym, and it stands for Mobile Industrial Robots. We were founded back in Odense, Denmark in 2014. MIR was an independent company until Teradyne Robotics purchased them in 2018. Teradyne Robotics has a few sister companies under the umbrella, one of which is Universal Robots. So that's considered our sister company. Yeah, so MIR has many regional offices around the world, but we have three in the Americas. The office I report out of is Novi, Michigan.
And what's happening at MIR?
Yeah, so MIR is really solely dedicated to perfecting AMR technologies. So we are basically constantly evolving, developing not only our robot, but our software. And that's one thing I think as soon as you get your hands on a MIR robot, you kind of get that. You understand like, wow, they've been working on this for over 10 years now and have been putting these robots out into market and really understand the challenges that you're going to face. So I think that's one of the biggest things that people like about working with us.
Can you kind of just describe the robot for the audience?
So our robot's called an autonomous mobile robot, or an AMR. Our closest relative in the space would be considered an AGV. And the major difference between an AGV and an AMR is typically how they navigate. So an AMR navigates on a LiDAR map, whereas an AGV requires magnetic strip tape, RFID tags, or reflectors to be mounted in the environment. So the advantage of a LiDAR map is that you have the ability to make modifications on the fly. You can be very, very kind of flexible with an autonomous mobile robot. It also gives you the ability to navigate around objects. So if something falls in the pathway of an AGV, a cardboard box, you can be down production, down an hour production if a cardboard box sits there in its path for an hour. So pretty unlikely, but it happens, right? So an autonomous mobile robot will actually be able to perceive an object in front of it and then navigate around it.
What are some of the trends that you're seeing in warehousing and autonomous collaborative technologies? Are loads getting heavier? Or are they getting lighter? Or are more people buying more robots?
Yeah, well, I think one of the big trends is really forked-based AMRs. So moving towards away from a deck load robot, which is where the load sits directly over top of the robot itself. One of the trends that I think a lot of people are seeing in this space is the need or the intention to start moving to forked-based AMRs. There's some advantages and disadvantages to forklift-type AMRs. One of the big ones is really just pick timing as well as footprint. You know, the robot itself has to perceive the pallet, go to pick it. And then once it does pick it, it's, maybe twice as long now. The payload literally doubles the size of the robot. Whereas with a deck load robot, the payload sits over top. So it's as small as a footprint you could probably get with the payload sitting directly over top of the robot. Yeah, your question about payloads, AMRs are considered to be collaborative robots, right? They work in space with most operators, people, fork trucks, other AMRs or AGVs. So when it comes to payloads, typically you're not going to want to work beside something that's maybe moving a huge component, right? You don't want to necessarily have the agility of an AMR navigating with a huge heavy piece of equipment on top of it or a huge heavy part on top of it. That being said, we do operate up to about 3,000 pounds today. Payloads definitely are pretty high, but not to a point where it's maybe intimidating to work beside.
Now, you released a fork-based robot with NVIDIA. Tell our audience a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. This year at Automate, we launched Pallet Jack. So it's our MIR 1200. It's a 1200 kilogram payload pallet jack style robot. And yeah, it's in partnership with NVIDIA. We basically do our palette perception, palette grading, palette picking all through a vision-based system instead of, you know, traditional forked AMRs or AGVs are using their LiDAR or their area scanners to identify palettes. We think there's a huge benefit to using vision because now you can look at things like shrink wrap palettes or maybe even partially broken or obstructed palettes, still be able to perceive that palette and then go ahead and pick.
No, that's cool. And of course, you've got some background in machine vision, so I'm sure that helps you in your on the sales side.
Definitely, definitely.
What about configurations? Are you seeing, like, I assume you're seeing six-axis robots mounted on mirrors?
Yeah, we call that like a mobile cobot. Mir actually offers like a mobile cobot out of the box, probably the most complete mobile robot today that you can buy. It's just a single part number. Yeah, it comes with our Mir 250 or 600. And then it comes with a Universal Robots collaborative robot on top of it. A lot of people are using that for like machine tending applications, you know, just tote deliveries, right? Picking off of shelves, maybe at multiple locations. So instead of building a complicated top module that has to comply to multiple different heights, you have the flexibility of a collaborative six-axis robot on top of a collaborative or, you know, autonomous mobile robot. So it's kind of the ultimate in flexibility.
Thanks for that, Kevin. So who are the economic buyers and the influencers that you're talking with on a daily basis, and kind of what's their pain?
Yeah, when it comes to kind of constructing an ROI for this type of technology, sometimes it's not as simple as just, you know, fork truck and driver. Sometimes you have to get more creative on how you construct that ROI. Sometimes it's more than just, you know, that hardware and maybe that replacement. It's really a matter of trying to understand what this robot will do for your facility. So, you know, and a lot of times I'm walking through facilities and the customer may not be ready for an AMR, right? It may be that their 5S isn't right. Maybe it's that, you know, the facility is just completely dynamic and it's going to be very hard to navigate in. But these are all kind of challenges that you can kind of give yourself, you know, from a facility perspective. As long as the people can accept the technology and really, you know, start to adopt it, there's a lot of other kind of fringe benefits that come with it. I mentioned 5S. It's like you walk through a facility. I love walking through a facility pre an AMR and then post, because you can really see like, oh, they've painted the floor now. They've really made sure that, you know, their operators are leaving components where they should be. Their 5S is on point, whereas sometimes that's one of their biggest challenges.
And we should really explain what 5S is. I'll let you do that.
My perception of 5S is everything has its place, right? So it's really tidy. It's the opposite of what my garage looks like, basically.
You know what? I was going to say everything has its place, so we must have gone to the same 5S school.
Nice.
And you mentioned, too, in our pre-call that you've got some pre-sales tools like simulations.
Yeah, so one of the things that I think customers have a hard time wrapping their head around is, what will my facility look like if I can't, you know, what will my facility look like with an AMR in it? If this is going to be considered critical architecture or infrastructure for my facility, what happens when maybe one of the robots goes down? Maybe I skewered it with a forklift. You know, what happens if my peak demand, all of my lines all of a sudden need deliveries? What, you know, maybe that's the beginning of the shift, or maybe that's, you know, the end of the shift. What do I do with my partial skids? You know, some of these challenges are really hard. They're really unknowns, right? It's easy to say that you sized your fleet completely until you come up to an unexpected or a surprise, right? One, two, three of my robots are down, you know, whatever it could be, right? So yeah, simulations definitely help with trying to understand those cases and those, you know, potential problems, right? Peak demands, aisles being obstructed. There could be a number of different things. And simulation really helps you to try and understand and really crystal ball, right? Look into the future.
Can you give me some examples of maybe some recent installations or use cases?
I'll speak to the Canadian market. The automotive industry has been and will continue to kind of adopt this technology all the way from, you know, the assembly facilities all the way to the tier one, tier two, you know, tier three type suppliers. One of the big drivers or implementation points for customers today is just getting fork trucks off the manufacturing floor. Sometimes having a fork truck large counterbalance fork trucks that are servicing your warehouse and your manufacturing floor, when you have all those operators walking around, unfortunately, sometimes there can be incidences, right? So I think one of the biggest drivers, and especially the conversations I'm having today, are around safety. And they're really trying to remove any potential for harm on the manufacturing floor. So the beauty of an AMR is it will never hit you, but you can still hit it. So I mentioned before, like, you know, shish kebabbing an AMR, it's a thing. It happens, unfortunately. But it's much better that you're shish kebabbing an AMR than you are a person, right? So that's I would say, one of the big drivers. Some of the other places we're seeing implementations would be hospitals. So delivery of maybe linens, delivery of medication, you know, these long hallways, long halls, right? It's a perfect situation for an AMR, because instead of having that maybe highly paid, you know, person, nurse, whoever, walking medications or anything around the facility is a waste, right? It's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy, effort. So to be able to implement an AMR for that type of environment is absolutely perfect.
You know, it reminds me of the times at ATS when you'd have to walk to shipping in a 250,000 square foot factory, and there goes an hour of your day almost by the time you get back and forth.
Yeah, like the aerospace industry is another great one, right? Because you're building huge, you know, airfoils, wings, whatever they are, right? They're usually big. So the facility needs to house that. It needs to be big too. So when you have to go and get like a socket wrench from the tool crib, whatever it is, that becomes prohibitive, right?
Yes, it can be. It's a very expensive tool at that point in time. Can you tell us a little bit about fleet management software?
So fleet's the backbone of any multi-AMR type installation. So our fleet software is just called Fleet, and it has the ability to manage any of our robots in our environment or in our portfolio. So it can be low payload MiR 250 all the way up to, you know, the 1200 pallet jack, 1350 deck load robot. All of them work in the fleet. And what I like to think of the fleet is like a dispatcher. So it's consuming all your calls. It's consuming, you know, operator one says, I need material at line one. They press that button, they get the call. The fleet will identify the location of the first point. So where's my pickup? And it'll identify and send the best fit robot. So whether that be the robot's best geographically located, whether that be it has enough battery, maybe it's not carrying a load already. These are things that the fleet has the ability to manage so that you don't have to.
How does one get started on this journey, as if I own a warehouse or so, understanding if an AMR is right for our business?
Yeah, great question. Honestly, to start the journey, I think is to have somebody like myself or one of my partners come in and look at the facility, because it's not as simple as saying, yes, this is a perfect technology to fit your situation or your facility. It's really looking at things like localization. It's looking at things like infrastructure in place. Again, like an AMR doesn't require a physical piece of infrastructure to be there, but it does require, you know, fixed markings to be able to navigate. So in spaces where you have no fixed markings, the robot's going to be lost all the time, right? So really, to get started, it makes sense to reach out to somebody that can advise you whether or not your facility is right. So some of the things that I think about is my facility, you know, highly dynamic, which most manufacturing facilities are. You know, do I have good Wi-Fi coverage? IT infrastructure is critical to the success of this type of implementation. And then, what do my material movements look like? How far am I moving material from point A to point B, and how often am I doing that? If you're looking at long distances, or if you're looking at high frequencies, AMRs are probably a great fit for you.
What are some of your predictions for AMR industry? I know you haven't been in it that long, but you've been in automation for a long time.
Yeah, I would say one of my predictions is definitely getting to this more general adoption of the technology. Today, customers that are implementing one, two robots are really just kind of dipping their toes in the pool and trying to understand, you know, am I doing grocery store runs with this robot? Am I delivering parts to line? Am I putting, you know, tool crib parts on it, those type of applications? Do I mount a collaborative robot on top? So customers are really just trying to understand, like, what is this technology and how do I deploy it? So Myself, I'm thinking general adoption is, you know, on the near horizon. You know, a lot of customers now have one, two robots and they're understanding how to use them. They're going to move into phase two and say, this is how I'm going to execute my ROI. This is how I'm going to improve the safety of my facility. This is how I'm going to, you know, improve my reliance on material deliveries. And I think that's really the big thing is really understanding the technology and knowing how to deploy it.
Thank you for that, Kevin. How do you sell an AMR system?
Yeah, so I think it's really critical to have an AMR on the floor in your facility. So we do have a demo van. We have robots that we can get to site all throughout Canada. Honestly, myself, I like to get the robot to site. I like to do a map. I like to put it on your Wi-Fi infrastructure. I like to really understand and let you drive, let you build the program. Like one of my favorite things about demoing this type of technology is giving the tablet over to the customer. And honestly, in most cases, I don't touch that tablet for the rest of the day. The customer kind of gets into the UI and they go, oh, okay, this is easy. And then maybe at first it's intimidating. Honestly, once you have a quick walkthrough, 15, 20 minutes of the technology, you get comfortable with how our environment works. Myself personally, I love to get to site. I love to get the robot in your hands, the UI in your hands. And get to work. You know, I've gone to facilities. Last week I was at a facility in Ottawa and they had their material automated within half a day. That's mapped, that's, you know, troubleshooted. Uh-oh, this aisleway was blocked. Now how do I create logic to go down the other aisleway? The customer did the entire programming and they were done in half a day. That's the best way to sell the technology.
And I assume the user interface on the touchpad is super easy, right? Like this is part of this hook.
Exactly. It's very simple. And especially if you're like scaling up to multiple robots, you manage one map with the fleet and then it's literally click and drag. You just implement the new robot and it's going to start, you know, operating your mission queue. It's going to start, you know, just like it was there from phase one, you know, scaling up with our fleet is just, yeah, so simple.
Hey, Kevin, when you're not automating, integrating, and keeping workers safe, what do you like to do? Do you have any hobbies? I see some guitars behind you, and I heard the odd little scream in the background.
Oh, yeah. So you hear my singer in the kitchen. I have a two-year-old daughter at home. I have a four-year-old son. He's at school. And we love music. We love playing music, for sure.
And how can people get a hold of you if they want to find out more? Obviously, they're probably Canadian because that's your territory.
Yeah, I would say connect with me on LinkedIn. I post a lot of content around AMRs, technology, and the Canadian market. So, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Follow me, send me a message, whatever it is. If you have questions about AMRs and MIR, I'm here and happy to help.
Thanks again, Kevin, for coming on. Our sponsor for this episode is Earhart Automation Systems. Earhart builds and commissions turnkey solutions for their worldwide clients. With over 80 years of precision manufacturing, they understand the complex world of robotics, automated manufacturing, and project management, delivering world-class custom automation on time and on budget. Contact one of their sales engineers to see what Earhart can build for you. And their info at earhartautomation.com. And Earhart is hard to spell. It's EHRHART. Our co-sponsor is Anker Danley. They're the leading manufacturer and distributor of robot and automation bases, high-quality die sets, components, blanchard ground steel plates, and metal fabrications used in the production of tools, dies, and molds for metalworking, automation, and the plastics injection molding industries. And I'd like to acknowledge A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. They are the leading automation trade association for robotics, vision and imaging, motion control and motors, and the industrial artificial intelligence technologies. Visit automate.org to learn more. And if you'd like to get in touch with us at the Robot Industry Podcast, you can find me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Attraction Industrial Marketing, and I'd like to thank my team, Chris Gray for music, Jeffrey Bremner for audio, my business partner, Janet, our sponsors, Earhart Automation Systems, and Anker Danley.